wanted to make this episode for such a long time. Do you remember, yeah. I remember when I was making the cat noises for the Source Elements adverts. Do you remember for the series of witch and cat commercials we did? And I thought then that it was a good idea, like a really interesting avenue to follow. So the whole thing's been brewing for quite a while, I think.
Have you been cast as lots of cats?
No,
since
I've not actually made
series of ads?
A cat demo, but I was so pleased. There is actually like a file somewhere on my computer of 25 different cat noises all trying to say a different thing.
Amazing.
Yeah, I was pleased with it.
Anyway, in this episode, we're going to be finding out how to make animal noises, aren't we? Mm-hmm. A wee bit. And yeah. We're going to listen to some of the, I'm sorry, finest examples of it in action by people who specialise in it, learning all about where you can actually use these skills as well. And, of course, desperately trying to keep up with Joe the VO's meteoric career trajectory, which was 100% all down to us and our planner.
Yes, you're welcome, Joe. But first, we sent a call out to all of the VO socialites of the world to send in their animal noises, their very best animal noises that they might or might not have done for jobs. And now, therefore, it is time for this.
I'm here in the voiceover zoo, where voiceovers from all around the world can be free to express themselves in a way that is simply impossible at home. As we move deeper into this extraordinary menagerie, we hear the sound of the farmyard in full flow. Grown men and women letting loose with joyous abandon. Honed over many years spent undercover, reading bedtime stories to children long into the night, these exceptional creatures are finally able to show off their skills. Here in a rare display of vicious, competitive behaviour, five voiceovers are gathered in battle to be the very best chicken. And that brings us to the end of our time in the zoo, a place where all voiceovers on Earth can be safe from predators, apart from those, of course, that are already inside.
Why are you here? Oh, you didn't have come.
Next up, we have Eloise Whitmore. So she's the MD of Naked Productions, who are an extraordinary company that tells stories with sound and tech. That's their thing. And you might remember we previously spoke to her for our Sex Noises episode, which ended up winning us an award at the Women's International Podcast Awards. But for this episode, we wanted to find out what for her makes a great animal performer and asked her, first of all, what project she's worked on that uses actors instead of animals.
Most of my experience of using humans to make animal noises has been to do with animation, so sound for animation. Because generally when, I think most of the things I've worked on has been in radio drama, and I've been able to make real animal noises apply. Whereas to picture, you've got to make it match exactly. So, you know, if an animal needs to be happy or an animal is sad or all those little noises that I'm, my dog's behind making noises right now, as if to demonstrate. So probably the first time I had to do an animal noise was for Kilogram Animations, and they did a series for the London Fire Brigade with a little dog called Flea, and he was constantly saving his owner from being, like, from setting the house on fire or from, what else did he do? He, you know, someone would light a candle and forget to put it out at night.
Of
so
course.
There were these really cute little short animations, and it's basically the Fire Brigade saying, make sure your smoke detector is fitted. And the I managed to use real animal noises, apart from for the end, they had a little ident where the dog went, now I'm going to have to do it for you,
yep.
where the dog went,
I love
and
it with the paws.
Yeah. So the only way to get that, because I tried to record access to the dogs I had, was I ended up doing it myself. Now the dog's lying under the table making noises, harumphing like a teenager. What's really hard is it's that same thing as a human acting, in that, you know, trying to, when you've only got audio, trying to make a sound that equates to a smile, trying to make a sound that equates to a sad noise, and then finding the equivalent for animals is actually quite hard. And it's funny that if you've got visuals, you buy that it's an animal, I think, much more so than in an audio drama where you haven't got visuals. Mm. I think often if a human has come up with the sounds to an animal and you're watching it, you just buy it,
right.
I think. Whereas in audio drama, if you're creating... So I tend to create creatures out of part human, part animal sounds. So say a snake that speaks, say we're talking about The Jungle Book, you'll have an actor creating the character of a snake, and he might make his zesses longer because that would be what you'd expect for the character of a snake. And then you'd add to that sort of the rattlesnake sounds, so it sounds like, you know, he's moving like a snake, or she is moving like a snake. So I think you bring, if an actor's playing an animal, you bring elements of the animal in with movement, and with maybe extra sounds that the animal would make, as well as the speech.
Like underneath?
Yeah, underneath. And also, you just sort of weave it into the speech as well. So I've had someone play a bear before, and I've brought in sort of growls and...
That's amazing. Yeah. So you're threading the growl sounds in with the actual spoken words of the actor.
Yeah. So probably the last time I did that was on the bite size things we did with Andy. Who was Andy playing?
So it was the Grendel.
Listen to the humans. When I hear the humans laughing, I want to crush their bones. They won't be laughing soon. Grendel is coming. Grendel will stop the laughing.
We had someone playing a bear once, and I weaved in his roaring with actual bear roars. So sometimes you try and beef up the human roar, and sometimes you just add elements in to make it sound more animalistic.
So when you were listening to the actor doing the bear roar, were you thinking, that sounds very beary, but I'm going to make it more beary? Or were you thinking, that doesn't sound very beary, I'm going to make it more beary?
You just, as a sound designer, you just play until you... And probably the human recording on its own would not be enough. So you'd want to, you'd do a lot of pitch shifting and you'd make it sound deeper. But more often than not, if you just bring in a little bit of the animal too, it sounds more animalistic.
When you've seen an actor performing an animal, what has struck you as really great that they've been doing, that's been really helpful to you as a sound designer?
I think when you physically see an actor take on the movements of the animal and make the noises, it seems more real. Perhaps it's to do with watching someone as well.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way as animation, you know, if you hear a human voice but they're playing an animal, you buy it. So if I see an actor being a monkey,
yeah,
and making monkey noises
and moving like a monkey,
I buy it.
Yeah, right.
So in Tumen Bay, there was a pet monkey played by a human, and it was played by an actor.
Right.
And actually, when I was deciding whether to use the actor noise or use the noise of a monkey, for me, the actor actually sounded like a monkey. So I used the actor, not the monkey. Because the monkey sounded human when I was playing it in my sound library. So in that situation, I did actually use the actor because it because he did a brilliant job. The actors I've come across, Lee Ingleby can do an amazing Dove. I can't remember why he did it one day. He just did it in studio and we ended up recording it.
Amazing.
Because he did an amazing Dove. I think some actors are just really good at imitating animal sounds. So.
And on his Anthony, or Andy, he has popped up in quite a few of the things that you've worked on as a monster voice, hasn't he? What is it that he does that means that he's such a reliable, terrifying monstrosity?
He can make his voice really small. He basically makes his voice imitate the character that he's playing. So I've noticed that if he is playing like a small gremlin, he sort of shrinks into his body and he creates this voice that's sort of small and whiny. And when he played the boggart for us in Sour Horde, that was sort of the creature that he took on, this sort of like small, horrible, boggart creature.
Your departure pudding and pie, kiss the girls and made them cry.
Whereas when he plays something that's massive, he sort of opens up his chest and he becomes that big, massive creature with a lot of bass in his voice and sort of a lot of gravitas. And then as a sound designer, you can really work with both of those. He's just very good at making his voice very big and very small, and then brings a lot of character into whatever he's playing.
Is there anything else that you think that you'd like to say about animal noise making? About maybe what else you might do to it afterwards? Is there anything else apart from adding the real sounds of real animals?
No, not really. I mean, you need the actor to do the work. So it's what they bring to, you know, making a happy sound, making a sad, making contented sound. And in my library of animal sound noises, you have a dog barking outside and you have a dog barking in a house and it's not really, you know, happy dog, sad dog, shy dog, flirty dog.
What would that even sound like? You're coming here often.
We're going to be talking about how to make noises like this and also where and why you might want to later on in the show. But before that, we thought we'd play you some examples of the sort of sound design Eloise was talking about there, but in use in big Hollywood movies. So to do this, we approached another podcast, 20,000 Hertz, they're called, and they made an excellent episode all about creature sounds in movies and video games, and they agreed to let us share a clip. So here it is.
That was the roar of King Kong from back in 1933. King Kong's voice was famously made by mixing the growls of lions and tigers. Then what they did was reverse the tape and sprinkled in a few human grunts. Here's our modern recreation. 20 years later, we were introduced to Godzilla, whose iconic roar was made by sliding a leather glove covered in resin across the strings of a double bass. In the early 80s, John Carpenter released the sci-fi horror film The Thing. There's a scene where a group of dogs transform into a weird, goopy, Lovecraftian creature. The shrieking sound it makes was created by combining heavily processed bird calls with pig squeals. The Lord of the Rings movies were full of great monster sounds. One of my favorites was the fire-breathing demon called the Balrog. Sound designers created his menacing rumble by dragging a cinder block across a wooden floor. Finally, when the monsters in A Quiet Place open their highly tuned ears, that's actually the sound of celery and lettuce being twisted and snapped.
Oh, I love 20,000 Hertz. So it's great. Nice.
It's
thanks,
amazing.
20,000 Hertz, for letting us use that clip. Their show, by the way, is all like that, all that kind of jazzy sound design and stuff. And they've covered also like topics that are useful to us, like dubbing and loop groups, the new voices of the Looney Tunes. Plus, they recently spoke to, I'm so impressed by this, they recently spoke to VO socialite and all-round bloody good egg, Eleanor Hamilton of eLearning Voices, about her work as the voice of the London Underground.
Yes.
We'll link to that in the show notes, of course, but you can find it, you know, wherever you're listening to us on.
Yes, time for an ad then from our lovely sponsors, Source Elements. So this one's a throwback to when we first began our partnership with them. Remember Witch and Cat?
What's going on here? I didn't say you'd have a party. Are you by yourself? You're remote recording an entire musical? Which one? Never mind. How are you doing that? You're using Source Connect? My nemesis! How could you? I don't care if everybody else is doing it. Oh, you traitor!
Source Connect, the future of voiceover recording.
Good to have Witch and Cat back.
if
you'd like to hear the whole story of how Witch and Cat tried to take down Source Elements, those pesky nuisances, we'll put them all. We put them all together in our How to Find Sponsorship for Your Podcast Without Selling Your Soul episode, which we'll link to in the show notes.
Now, we couldn't make a show about animal noises without acknowledging the existence of Frank Welker. So Frank is every character you have ever known.
He
played Garfield, Gremlins, Kermit the Frog, Scooby-Doo, Woody's horse in Toy Story, Totoro in My Neighbour Totoro. He's Santa's little helper in The Simpsons, Abby the Monkey and Roger the Tiger in Aladdin. And actually, I saw a story about how they cast Nibbler in Futurama. And the casting director was just like, oh, that's Frank's job. That was it.
Career goals.
Career girl, I know, but that's Nick's job. Just send it to Nick.
That's fine, just send it.
let's hear a bit of Frank Welker in action.
Come on, remember what Nanny said? We've got to figure out some way to agree on the rule.
Oh,
I'm sorry, Raja. But I can't stay here and have my life lived for me. I'll miss you.
Nick, what is going on here? How can we all make sounds like Frank Welker?
He is like one of a kind, isn't he? Well, he's not, because there's actually loads of people who do amazing animal noises on the internet, because I went into a very peculiar hole, internet hole of like videos of people doing all these animal noises. Oh my God. Because I have to say, it's not something I've ever had to think about doing.
Right.
I've never been asked to do one.
Right.
I feel really sad.
Oh, no. Nick, will you please do me an animal noise?
So let's think about this from a vocal manipulation point of view, right, first.
Yes,
and then I'll add on a few animal-specific things that I've been exploring and analysing on my journey down the internet. So vocal manipulation ultimately is sort of three basic things to think about. One is the energy, like the energy behind the voice, which can lead to help with the rhythm and the intonation and the kind of percussive nature of the sound you're making or the animal's character that you're trying to portray. The next thing is like placement of the voice. So resonance, so vocal resonance, and whether it feels like it's something that's kind of in the throat or something that's in the mouth or something that's slightly more nasal. And it's all about how you shape and change the shape of the vocal tract, which is the area from the vocal folds to the nose and the mouth. There's loads more to resonance than that, but basically the sorts of things that change the tonal quality of the sound that you're making. So like a cat might be like something slightly more nasal, whereas a dog might be something slightly more pharyngeal. I am available, guys, if anyone's out there needs a very generic cat or a dog. And then the third thing that you can think about is what's happening with the articulators, so the tongue and the lips and all that kind of stuff, and all the different ways you can change the shape really specifically once the sound kind of gets into the oral cavity. So for speech, that's how we make the letters that we're saying. But for animals, it's more just the peculiarities that happen with animal articulatory patterns because they're making different sounds. So one of the things I discovered was this guy making a cat noise, and he was like, he was this really like chill guy, like, hey, I just want to really explain how I do my cat noise. And I was like, this is a remarkable person who's got a very interesting personality sides. And he did like, he was like, you could just do, if you use the word meow, 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 that's where people go to. But if you do one very tiny thing where it's like you almost put an L in, meow, meow, then it all already starts to sound a bit more like a cat than just saying meow. So that was really interesting. So what you can do with the articulators.
Yeah, I hear it. I can hear when I'm putting my the tip of my tongue up to make an L sound.
Meow, meow.
Yeah, yeah.
Meow, meow. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Great.
Meanwhile, there's dogs outside my door going, what? Then the other couple of other things I picked up on, though, when I was listening to these people was one thing to think about is whether the sound is egressive, which means the airflow comes up and out, straight out, or ingressive, which is where the sound actually feels like it's coming in. So like one, a dog might be right, or it could be like with the sound coming in rather than out, which I thought was a really interesting thing that I'd not thought about in relation to animal sounds, because I never thought about animal sounds before.
Yeah, right.
You know, it happens sometimes in some of Scandinavian accents. They have like, yeah, yeah, like kind of ingressive sounds. Irish mums, yeah, yeah, gotcha, yeah, yeah. Like that's just right. One of the kind of affirmation sounds that we have in like Southern Irish vernacular. But yeah, it's a really interesting one when you think about animal noises too, ingressive or egressive.
Actually, I think that if you listen to some of the monster noises at the start of the show, there's definitely some ingressive sounds going on there.
Yeah. It's a really interesting way of working because it can feel slightly, I think, from playing around, if you do it with ease and minimal tension, it can feel less taxing on the voice than... Ingressive can feel less taxing than aggressive versus like, you know, for me anyway, that's two weird sounds to make in a row.
They are, but I really hear that. Do you know what I understand it, yeah.
So yeah, really interesting. Effort's something to think about as well, I think, because it's so easy with something that is not within your habitual vocal range to really push for it and really ask your voice for a lot. And actually what you need to remember nearly all of the time with anything that's outside your habitual comfort zone when it comes to voicing is always ask your body for less. So try the sound, see how it feels, and then try and do it with slightly less input, but can you get the same output? Great. You know, so if you're doing a monster, you might be like, rah! Or whatever it is. That's
a that was
terrible
a good face.
Monster. Nice. Such a shame this isn't a video podcast.
Yeah.
But then you might want to see if you can do that with slightly less effort just because of your, you know, vocal health and things. And of course, always warm up, reset and cool down, stay hydrated, la, 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 la.
Of course.
And then the other thing, of course, is whether you're actually having it, whether it's like a voiced or an unvoiced sound. So what we mean by that is, are the vocal folds vibrating or not? Or is it something that is more articulatory created? So like... really simple examples of that are something that's based around a whistle, like some kind of bird. Terrible. But my vocal folds aren't vibrating there. So that's something interesting to think about. And then versus something that does need that. Like a cow. Or something.
Great.
And then the other thing I came across, which is really interesting, was this fella, and maybe we could just link to this one thing, yeah. But he was doing a cricket, you know that kind of cicada cricket sound that you hear when you're abroad? That,
yes.
Whatever, that sounds like a creaking bed.
Yeah. Oh, bed, yes.
Like I said, I am available. And what he when he broke it down, this fella, he talked about doing two very different sort of articulatory vocal positions at the same time, and that's how he got it. Okay, so one we'll of the things it. He did was what we would call an unvoiced uvular trill, which is, you know, the dingly dangly where, like I can only do it voiced, I think. That kind of French very kind of sound with a whistle at the same time.
Wow.
And I tried, but I doesn't sound like Spain at all. But so there's another thing you can think about is like doing two things at the same time, which in my head takes me into like mad, crazy beatboxy territory.
Yeah, I remember that.
Whatever it is. Anyway, I sound like I'm having a stroke.
Pretty musical stroke. Great. Yeah, so great. Well, so that's how. That's how then. So now let's find out from super duper VO and animal noises expert, and I do not say this lightly, expert Diane Perry on why.
Why though? Why?
So basically my childhood was spent with a little reel-to-reel tape recorder practicing animal noises and sound effects. That was my childhood. Every spare second was spent in my room just playing with voice and just listening back. I was fascinated. And obviously, like everyone in the world, hated my voice. The sound of my voice, of my speaking voice when I heard it back. But as most voice actors, we learn to love it, don't we? We fall in love with the sound of our own voices. But no, the love of animal noises never left me. And
but wait,
when
stop. Go back a bit. So why, though? Why? Why were you in your room doing noises?
What where were all your okay. friends, Diane?
That's another very sad story. Why, you say? Because, I don't know, because I was fascinated. I've just always been fascinated by sound. And I've always been fascinated by, can I make that sound with my voice? Can I imitate that sound, and how close can I get? And so not just animal noises, but bicycle horns.
Yes.
And ambulances.
Well, it really paid off because I was listening to your animal noises and sound effects reel on your website. Oh, and is it all right if we play a little bit of it?
Of course, yeah.
That's better.
It's too early in the morning for this.
That's one of the reasons why we wanted to talk to you, is because you are the quality of what you're creating, but also like the work that you're doing. You're not just making these noises with a reel-to-reel tape recorder anymore. You're actually working with them. So why don't you tell us about what it is that you're getting booked for to do this stuff in?
Well, I mean, to be honest, bits and pieces over the years until... Well, let me tell you about the bits and pieces. So, for example, I remember very clearly, I don't know who it was, but when I was doing a lot of radio, a lot of ISDN radio, someone called, I sort of got a reputation for this, and someone called and said, we need you to be a ferret called Brian.
Sure.
And I said, sure. Well, this is a new high or a new low, depending on how you want to look at it. But this is so cool. I mean, who gets a phone call like that? We want you to be a ferret called Brian. Or we need you to be the voice of a golf ball.
Of course.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's just a Tuesday, isn't it?
Classic.
Yeah, it's just a Tuesday, Nick. So, you know, bits and pieces like that. A lot of that kind of thing for radio. I think I did my bicycle horn for maybe a couple of radio commercials.
That's a great sentence.
I know. Who gets to say that? Yes, my bicycle horn has made several appearances.
See, well, it's interesting what you say about people got to know that you did this kind of thing. Is that because... Why? How? How did people get to know?
How? Because I... you know, I think the very foundation of that is that when I get nervous, I babble. And so if I was doing an ISDN job with someone, I sort of just go into performance mode and go into stand-up comedy mode. I did that for a while as well, stand-up comedy. Nick, we have that in common. So I just go into kind of, you know, that kind of cringy now when I think about it, but just that mode of, let me show you everything I can do kind of thing, you know, when you're first starting out and you're hungry. And so, I had an animation or a character reel, I called it at that time, which had things like that on it. So I just, you know, and I marketed myself as the Bicorn Lady.
Did you?
That was how I marketed myself in the beginning. And my cassette tape, my very first demo cassette tape, that tells you how long ago it was, had a bicycle horn, a picture of a bicycle horn on the front. Okay. Because I needed, you know, I didn't understand USPs clearly at that point, obviously.
I think you did. I think you absolutely did.
Did I? Oh, okay.
Which is a very new USP.
Just
instinctively. I would listen to that tip.
I'm the Bicorn Lady. You know, you want me for your next radio commercial. So, and then I suppose it was just conversations like, well, what else do you do? Oh, well, you put a quarter in the machine now. Let me show you everything I can do.
So Brian the Ferret then, that was the first proper job, was it?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that was the first one. That was just one that sticks in my mind. I mean, I don't remember who booked me. It was a radio production place. But you never forget your first Brian as Ferret. You never forget. I don't know where he is now. What is he doing? Does he think of me? But, you know, I think basically it's just fun. It's just fun. Mm-hmm. And also, I'm a performer through and through, and I love making people laugh, and I love surprising people. So, you know, I'm this very tall, some say elegant, some say not, American lady. And no one, you know, in my stand-up act, it was mostly animal noises and sound effects with you know, woven within stories.
Great.
So, and no one ever heckled me. I think they were just too shocked to heckle me. I mean, how do you heckle a tall American lady on stage barking like a terrier, you know?
I wish I'd known this when I was on the stand-up circuit, just barking.
Yeah, I mean, how do you heckle someone like that? And it just reminded me of another outing that my dogs had. Oh, I can't believe I forgot about this. So many years ago, there was a morning television show called Rise. I think it was on Channel 4, but it was a really long time ago. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. I'm sure it was called Rise. Anyway, so it was Crufts Week, and they got in touch, and they wanted me to come on and do some dog impressions for Crufts Week. So I arrived there. They sent a car to pick me up, and they drive me there. And turns out that Dani Minogue was on the same show. And she was just at the beginning of her... Sorry, Leah?
This is like a fever dream. I don't know what's happening.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's just... It doesn't even seem real. But anyway, Dani Minogue was on there, and she was trying to get her a solo career going. Yeah. And next to her, she had all these people flitting around her, like adjusting every tiny little hair and just making her look perfect. And I'm sitting there, you know, feeling like this giant Amazon lump who's there to bark like a dog. I mean, I've never felt less attractive in my life. And so, the time came. Actually, there was a few times throughout the show, and they were interviewing Dani, and I was sort of in the background. And then they were having me do different breeds of dog. So, like, you know, I do like a hound dog, like a really kind of like deep throated hound dog. And then I was, can you do a terrier? Can you do what? I can't remember exactly what they asked me to do. So I was behind Dani Minogue, you know, this beautiful glamazon. And I'm just, you know, barking in the background, like barking like a dog. It was just surreal.
Great.
Surreal.
What more things then? Tell us about all the other types of work that you've been doing with your animal noises.
Oh, well, I mean, what I started to say, so that's kind of like the bits and pieces. Mm. So lots of radio, yes. Here and there doing sound effects and whatever. And, of course, Rise with Dani Minogue during Crufts Week. Bizarre. But then, eventually, I sort of got the brass ring for animal noises. So
what does that mean?
Someone
what does that
that
mean?
I'd
What's
done...
The brass ring?
Well, the brass ring, when you go around the merry-go-round, you grab the brass ring. That's sort of like the highest kind of like, it's like the big prize.
Oh, great.
The big prize.
Oh,
for, it's an American saying, I guess, when you get the brass ring. So someone who I had done several animation series with before got in touch, and he said, well, we're doing this one for Flying Bark. I think it was Flying Bark Productions in Australia. Can you come and audition? Sure, great. And then he said, oh, there's lots of animals in it. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Yay!
So I turn up and I do the audition and I get the part. And I'm sure that he cast me just because of the animal noises. And I don't care. I don't care why he cast me. So in that series, I can't even count what I got to do. I think I did a magpie. I did a giant cat hawking up a fur ball.
Great.
There was a mama hog. I seem to remember a mama hog. There were chickens and probably a rooster, all kinds of different birds. And it was just dogs and cats. And it was like, oh my gosh, it was so much fun.
That's lovely. When you're in there then, because obviously it's fun because you're just getting to do the fun playing about, but also what sort of direction notes are you getting to guide you?
Do the voice of a giant cat hawking a fur ball.
Right, fine.
Go.
You know,
not much direction. Yeah,
you know,
the fur ball is slightly more round. I mean, how do you direct that? Just do some wild animal noises. Do some wild magpies. Do some wild whatever.
Have you ever had a director say, sorry, I don't think that sounds like that. Can you try another one? Or is it like, do they just be like, yeah, trust that it...
Well, you're doing a cartoon, so it's not like, oh, well, that doesn't sound like the file that we found on, you know, on YouTube. No, I mean, they're not usually looking for, you know, precision, although I do pride myself in precise animal noises. But they just, you know, they want something that's right for the moment. They want something mostly that drives the comedy, because that's what drives animation is comedy.
When you're working on the animation, then are you given like a picture of a character and then you base the sounds you're making on that picture, or are you ever working to an animation that's already been created and fitting the sound in with that?
Well, no, that's a really good question. It depends. Sometimes you're doing original animation, so you may or may not see pictures of images of the characters. I always find that's the most useful, because then you can kind of imagine how their mouth works and all of that. For this particular project, we were in between. So we were in between original animation and something that's already done. So we were working towards what they call an animatic. So that's basically, I'm sure you know what that is. So that's basically a moving storyboard. So if you imagine the cells, you know, like if you've seen a Disney animation,
yeah.
So you imagine the cells. So they move those. So it's a very rough, very jerky kind
right,
of story,
yes.
Like moving storyboard. That's called an animatic. So that's what we were working towards for this particular project. So I could see the cat, just a drawing of the cat. So I could kind of see how big the cat was, you know, in relation to the other animals or whatever. So I knew how big the fur ball hawking had to be, you know,
great.
So just like, you know, in relation to the size of the cat. I can't even believe I'm talking about these sort of things. Like, oh yes, well, you know, just like someone
else. What would be, if you could just magic up a job, what would be your dream job for using your animal skills in? Who would it be for? And what would be the project?
What would be the animal?
That was it. That animation series, that was it. I mean, it just doesn't get, for someone who loves to do animal voices and to be able to step into a studio and get paid for it and do a whole series. Well, plus I got to actually play, you know, other characters as well. In that particular show, it was called The Woodleys, actually, if you want to know the name of it. So I played...
We'll link to it. Can we link to it? Is there a way of linking to it?
I think there might be a couple of things on YouTube. There's actually something on my website from The Woodleys.
Oh, great. Fine. We'll link to your website.
Yeah, so I played an ancient sage, kind of a Yoda-type character. And she was actually based on... I used Katharine Hepburn as the core of her and then changed her a little bit. So... She was kind of like the old kind of daughter. We say, oh, you know, oh, yes, that's right, younglings. So sort of like a Katharine Hepburn bass with a bit more vibrato and more animal thrown in. But yeah, so that was just everything. That was just everything I love to do, all wrapped up in one job. And I got to fly to Ireland.
Well, okay.
For each section I understand of episodes, you know, to Teligale. It was all done at Teligale.
Yeah, Ireland's huge for animation, right?
So big.
Yes. Yeah. But one thing I did miss on that show was that we all of the actors did their thing separately. So I did miss that working off of another actor.
So that exact job plus more people in the room at the same time. That's the dream. All right, let's put it out there, guys. Put it
out
there.
Absolutely. But you know what? I don't have to wait to get paid. I don't have to wait to be in front of a microphone to do these things. We're talking like some people sing in the shower. No, I practice my donkey. I practice my, you know.
That's
amazing. Maybe I shouldn't have shared that. I don't know.
So if you're only interested in animal noises, and this is your first time finding us, like you were just randomly Googling, how to do animal noises to enhance my voiceover career, and up we popped. It might be your first time experiencing the voiceover social, but you may not know that we've been using a voiceover. Using sounds really harsh.
No, we absolutely have.
But we have, yeah, fully using him. Using a voiceover called Joe Troy as a bit of a guinea pig. Oh my God, do we have a guinea pig noise?
Oh, I haven't been sent one. Oh, disappointing.
What noise does a guinea pig make?
I don't know. Yes, that's it. Anyway, or the sound of a spinning plastic wheel.
Anyway, we've been using Joe Troy as a guinea pig to see how adding our voiceover career planner to his life can help him achieve his goals.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes this month on designing the second generation of the voiceover career planner. So we've been incorporating feedback from people who managed to get a copy of the first one. And reading through that, one of the things that really stood out to me is how much people were appreciating the weekly achievements page. Mm. So this is where at the end of each week, you turn to the back of the book and write down something you've done that you're proud of. And then at the end of the year, you have two lovely pages of incontrovertible proof of how great you are.
A book that tells you how great you are. Yes, lovely. Please.
Yep.
It was an idea actually that came from Brendan in our initial focus group. It's such a good one. So anyway, this month we thought we'd find out how Joe had been finding it. And it turned out he'd been doing it his own way for quite a while. Joe, the VO, will not conform.
He will not.
Joe, the VO. I've been doing it kind of backwards in the sense that obviously you give yourself, I haven't really been writing achievements, but I've been writing goals for the week. Now, sometimes some things don't get done, but it's kind of like I always make one big task to accomplish by the end of the week. And obviously, you know, over the last month, I've kind of changed that slightly to match what the book actually tells you to do. So
in the intention of it, yeah.
In the intention of it, yeah. So I tried out something different. I haven't dated it, but I've got the last 5 weeks down.
Give me them one after the other. Brilliant.
Okay, so I've got my website completed.
Woo!
That's all done now. So that was 5 weeks ago. I'm going backwards.
I've seen it. It looks good. It looks really good.
Thank you. And then I finished recording my first computer game, which was exciting.
That is exciting.
Yeah, finished that. I can't really
speak
on it
yet. What was your role? Can you tell me anything about it?
Oh, it wasn't like a leading role or anything like that, but it was just fun to, you know, work on it. My role is I'm kind of the voices of the bad guys. It's like a platform kind of thing.
Yeah.
So So I'm just shouting at people as you do in computer games.
Oh yes, lovely. I love
like,
it.
What
oh,
are you
what
doing?
Fun!
Like move out the way, like that kind of stuff. So yeah, that was cool. It was interesting to do. So that was fun.
Yeah.
And then the week after that, I completed my taxes.
Oh, now that is that an achievement.
Yeah, that is an
Excuse
achievement.
Excuse me, is it even May yet? It's not even May yet.
It's
so
not.
In the month of the end of the tax year. Oh, well, we should all aspire to be you.
Do you know why? Because, we've covered this numerous amount of times, you know, during our conversations. And when I have something in my head, it won't go away until I've done it. Mm. And I kind of like, let me just do it. I kind of keep up to date with it throughout the year. So at the end of the year, I just need to, you know, dot things off and stuff like that. And then just send it all off and it's out my
Fantastic.
Hair for at least 2 months anyway until I get that.
Of all the things you've ever done, that is the one I'm most disgusted by.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. But yeah, it's done now, so I don't have to worry about it until the bill comes, and then I'm like, oh my God.
You don't know, I know.
But yeah, that's done. And then another one was, it's another job-related one. So I got, it's probably like what my biggest job to date. So I landed like a campaign for a car brand. Again, I can't talk about it. It's so annoying. I hate these NDA things.
Oh, wow, this is brilliant. Do you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say it. I'm just going to say what I'm thinking. What I'm thinking is that if it wasn't for the voiceover career planner, probably none of this would have happened. Is that right?
I agree. Because I wouldn't know when I'm recording. I wouldn't know, you know.
Great. Oh, I'm delighted.
Yeah, that was really exciting. Yeah, I didn't ever think I'd be approached by a company like that. So hopefully that should be coming out in the next couple months. It's a UK campaign, but it's all online. So yeah.
But when it happens and when you get a copy of it and when you tweet it, you just make sure that you tag us and then we can retweet it.
100%.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was really exciting to be a part of that. And yeah, and then obviously this is not in chronological order because this happened a while ago, but obviously, you know, I was lucky enough to be nominated again for One Voice Award. So
have you put that as your weekly achievement in one of those weekly achievements?
I did, but I don't know if that was an achievement, so to speak, because it's not something that I physically did, but that was in there nonetheless.
No, I think it counts. If you're putting it in the week with when you were nominated, that is an achievement. Yeah. It counts. I mean, achievement's a very broad umbrella, and I would say that if I was nominated for awards, I would say that that was an achievement for me.
Of course, I'm proud, you know, but I'm like, is it...
I see. I do know what you're saying, because it's not. It's somebody else's decision based on work that you did a long, long time ago. So
exactly.
So the work itself was the achievement, I suppose. But also, I do think that you're being silly. It's an achievement. Count as an achievement. So far, I've called you disgusting and silly in this.
Yes,
this
thank
moment.
You.
I hope you feel really encouraged. Lovely.
But yeah,
and that's
it's,
all five. Then that's your five.
Yeah, that's all five, and you know, I'm just. You know, on top of that, it's just trying to keep on top of everything and just trying to be as organized as possible, you know. And that's where the book has helped me. And, you know, there are, I'm not going to lie and say I stick to it 100%, because there are some weeks when I'm like, I forgot to do that. I'll do it next week. And then, you know, but for the most part, it's helped a lot. So, yeah, thank you for that.
Great. He said it's helping.
Yay, it's helping.
He did, he said it's helping. Like, we didn't even have to prompt that. Like,
no,
like,
I didn't.
Like, I didn't, he did say it. It's been really useful to have, like, to write stuff down. Like, the power of accountability is amazing as well. I think actually the, like, writing down the things that you do achieve is really powerful too. Like,
yeah,
that's so great. We should all just write everything brilliant. We've got to-do lists and all this stuff that we're like, I've done that, I've written that down. Remind me to do that. I have to do that. But we're never writing a post-it. Just did a really good voice over there, actually. Well done, me. Yeah. And stick that on the wall, do we?
Brilliant.
So I think it's really good.
Yeah, it is really good. Now, we're going to be making some huge announcements about the new generation of the VoiceOver Career Planner in the next few weeks. So if you didn't get a copy of the first generation and you don't want to miss out, do click the link in the show notes to add your name to the list.
Yes. Thanks again to 20,000 Hertz, Darren Altman, for his excellent David Attenborough impression, Eloise Whitmore, Diane Perry, and all the incredible members of the VoiceOver Zoo. That's a phrase I never thought I'd say. Who spent their precious time on being that little bit odder than usual for us.
Thank you.
We weren't able to use everything that was sent in because, honestly, it was a bombardment.
That's amazing.
So thank you very much. And apologies for anyone who we didn't have space for. We promise we listened and we enjoyed all of them.
We did.
And we've listed everyone whose work we did include in the show notes.
Yeah, we did. I've been Leah Marks.
And we are the VoiceOver
Together till the end of the road.